Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's episode is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Nadia for bringing Elijah's story to my attention. And I mentioned Elijah's story in my episode on Harmony Montgomery back in episode 103. Both occurred in the New Hampshire area. Both families knew each other. Both children were discovered missing within weeks of each other. Both children died at the hands of their parents. And both highlight massive failings in the child protection system. October 2021, Merrimack, Massachusetts. A 5-year-old boy is discovered missing after child protection and police cannot account for his whereabouts. No one can confirm seeing the boy for at least a month. Any missing child is an emergency. Those initial hours after a child goes missing are invaluable in locating them. But Eli's mother, who had custody of her son for the last year, she wasn't the one to report him missing. This is Elijah's story.
The mother of a missing New Hampshire boy and her boyfriend will face a judge this morning. They're charged with child endangerment and witness tampering in the disappearance of 5-year-old Elijah Lewis. Investigators now believe he was last seen at his home in Merrimack within the last 30 days. Crews have been searching an area near his home for the last 6 days, but they have no leads to where he is.
Elijah Easton Lewis was born January 7, 2016, to parents Tim Lewis and Danielle DeFinia in Arizona. In all the news articles I read from people who knew this little boy, he was referred to by his nickname Eli, a nickname he loved, so in respect for this sweetheart, I'm going to call him Eli throughout this story. Tim and Danielle would separate before Eli's first birthday, divorcing in January 2017. This was not an amicable split. During the contentious divorce, Tim would describe Danielle as violent and impulsive. That throughout their marriage there was allegations of domestic violence and substance abuse. And it seems that Danielle's criminal history does corroborate Tim's claims, with an arrest history of driving while intoxicated, theft by unauthorized taking, and theft from a building. Eli was Danielle's fourth child by 3 different men. No judgment, but this may have been due to Danielle's behaviours, because her 3 eldest children all lived with their fathers since they were babies, and this was usually at the insistence of Danielle, because she was known to go AWOL during her drug binges, some of her children being born with narcotics in their systems. As part of the divorce, Arizona courts ruled that Eli would remain in Tim's custody, and that Danielle was not to spend unsupervised time with her son. This arrangement seemed to be working fine for the first 4 years of Eli's life. He lived with his father and saw his mother very sporadically under supervision. May 2020. Without the knowledge or approval of the courts, Tim decided he could no longer handle Eli's behaviour and sent him to live with his mother Danielle in New Hampshire. According to posts on Facebook I found on the Wayback Machine, Tim was telling anyone who would listen that Eli was a danger to his younger siblings. Now, I don't know how or what was happening. There was no more information than that. Danielle was living in Merrimack, New Hampshire, with her boyfriend Joseph Staff and their 2-year-old daughter. And Merrimack is in Hillsborough County, around 40 miles out of Boston. The family were living in the basement of Joseph's mother Joanne's house on Sunset Drive, on the banks of Natticook Lake. Danielle was a stay-at-home mum, and Joseph managed a thrift store, which took him out of the house 6 days a week, sometimes working upwards of 12-hour days. Like Danielle, Joseph had a checkered history with accusations of serious domestic violence against the mother of his other children, a previous relationship to Danielle. Joseph's criminal history also included burglary and providing false identification to a police officer. Allegedly, Eli's bad behaviour continued with his mother. 2 of Danielle's brothers would later claim Eli would have regular tantrums and was very difficult to manage. However, I must say, This little boy was just uprooted from everything he knew and sent to live with his mother, who he barely knew. A mother who would later call her son a future Ted Bundy and whom she said she had no connection with. If Eli was being difficult and having tantrums, it would have been because of the stress of the situation, that he felt alone and out of control of what was happening around him, not because he was bad or naughty or anything like that. To handle Eli's outbursts, instead of talking to him or showing him love and attention, which would have done wonders for Eli's mental state and behaviour. Instead, Danielle would keep Eli in his room all day every day. Danielle claiming the five-year-old could not be trusted, that he would urinate throughout the house and play with his feces. Again, it could be argued that what was going on in Eli's life was causing the regression and not the child himself, but I digress. But what was clear is Danielle is not coping, and she would tell everyone who would listen that she did not want Eli. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
October 2021. Danielle and Joseph went to the Catholic Medical Center in Manchester, New Hampshire, to drop off their newborn baby boy. Danielle had just given birth to the baby in the family's bathroom. But Danielle had a habit of having children and then giving them up, which is what was going on here. Danielle and Joseph deciding to drop the child off at the hospital under the state safe haven laws. While doing intake at the hospital, Joseph refused to hand over his identification. And then when the baby was given a newborn check to make sure there was nothing wrong, it was determined the baby had drugs in his system and he was going through withdrawals. Which, if you have ever seen a baby going through withdrawals, it's the most heartbreaking thing you will ever see. This poor newborn baby in pain and shaking and screaming, having seizures. No way understanding what is going on. Being born into this world would be scary enough. How anyone can allow their child to be born this way, I don't know. It makes me so mad. But regardless, because of the state this baby was in, the hospital contacted the New Hampshire Department of Child, Youth and Families, or DCYF as we refer to them throughout this story today. During their official DCYF interview, Danielle and Joseph admitted to recently relapsing into their drug addictions, and they thought they could handle a baby going through withdrawals but quickly became overwhelmed. And to prevent DCYF involvement, they thought the best solution was to abandon the baby, because they didn't want to lose custody of their two-year-old daughter. Turns out they didn't get their wish and DCYF opened a file on the family for review. October 14th, 2021. About a week after this all happened, DCYF attended to the family home for a follow-up assessment. When they arrived, they noticed a happy little toddler and that was all. No other children in the home. Danielle completing the mandatory paperwork for DCYF, listing she only had the one child in her custody. When questioned, Danielle mentioned that Eli was living with her sister in California. This story would later change to Eli being with her brother in Texas. Both Joseph and Danielle texted Joseph's mother Joanne to warn her not to say anything about Eli if she were happened to be asked. But of course she would be asked. The Merrimack police would be the ones to question Joanne of her knowledge of Eli's whereabouts, where he was and when was the last time she saw him. Now I guess lying to DCYF is one thing and lying to the police is a whole other thing. Because while she agreed to not mention anything to DCYF, when questioned by police, she decided to talk. However, she is just as bad as Danielle and she couldn't keep her story straight either, telling police Eli was in the hospital for treatment for his behavioural issues, and then saying he was in Texas with his uncle, that it had been weeks since she had seen the five-year-old. This may have been the only truth any of them told police, because when they asked the neighbours and other family members, Initially, Eli was thought to be missing for 6 months. However, it would be determined that actually Eli hadn't been seen outside of those living at that house for at least a month. And this set off alarm bells for authorities. October 15, 2021. A search warrant was issued on the family home. During this search, police found a signed affidavit issued by DCYF for the temporary guardianship of Eli to be granted to Danielle's sister, who lived in California, and who Danielle initially claimed Eli was with. This woman had many times expressed interest in caring for Eli. Her husband worked in mental health, and they knew if they had Eli, they could get this traumatised little boy who had been through so much in his short years the help he needed. Hauntingly, police also discovered there was no pictures of Eli in the home. All of Eli's possessions, his clothing and toys, were piled into trash bags. This and the statements from Danielle and Joanne were enough evidence for police to be confident that Eli was no longer living in the home. But the concern here was, where was he, and was he safe and alive? At this point, Danielle and Joseph would have known what they had done had caught up with them. They had no reasonable explanation as to where Eli was. None that wasn't going to get them in more trouble than they were already in. So they fled. Police turned to the public, asking them for help in locating not only Eli, but also Danielle and Joseph. The descriptions, as well as the vehicles the couple were travelling in, a red Toyota truck, was distributed to neighbouring towns. They searched extensively in bushland and water, using helicopters in the air, as well as boats and dive teams in the Natticook Lake, whose shores were on the family's property. There was this fearful feeling amongst searchers that the lake was where they were going to find Eli. And they really did focus on that lake in the initial weeks of the investigation, bringing in different dive teams from all the surrounding New England states. But despite the extensive searches, no trace of Eli could be found. Now, there was a parallel focus on finding Danielle and Joseph too, and it wouldn't take long to track them down. They aren't the smartest of criminals. A call came in that a group of teens found a cell phone at Sandy Pond in Ayr, Massachusetts. The phone looked like it had been dumped there, and this broke the investigation wide open. The phone was linked to another phone the couple still had with them, and when police did their forensic thing, they were able to track down Danielle and Joseph's current location. October 17, 2021. Danielle and Joseph were both arrested in New York City, and they were extradited to New Hampshire, awaiting trial for charges on witness tampering and child endangerment. And the witness tampering was in relation to Danielle and Joseph convincing his mother to lie to the authorities about Eli's whereabouts. They both pleaded not guilty to the charges against them. The data on the cell phone found led investigators to a wooded area near the Ames Noel State Park in Abington, Massachusetts, more than 70 miles away from where Eli was living with his mother. Searchers were trying to remain hopeful that Eli was still alive, and they were confident that if he was at the park, they would find him. This was quite a large and extensive search, with the help of police, canine units, and air units from both states. October 23, 2021, 10 days after Eli was initially reported missing. Cadaver dogs uncovered buried remains. Massachusetts Plymouth County DA Tim Cruz stated the size and the condition of the remains led authorities to believe they had found Elijah Lewis.
More than a week after Elijah Lewis was first reported missing from his home here in Merrimack, police finding his body Saturday nearly 70 miles away. The search for 5-year-old Elijah Lewis coming to an end at Ames Knoll State Park in Abington. Investigators began searching the state park on Friday, and it's where they say a cadaver dog found Elijah's remains buried in the woods Saturday morning.
The medical examiner will make a determination as to the exact manner and cause of the death of Eli. At this point, no one has been charged.
The fact that he was disposed of down here in the woods, where our sympathies go out to his family.
Social workers reported Elijah missing from his Merrimack home along Sunset Drive back on October 14th. Police say it's when they discovered the boy had not been seen by family or friends for 6 months.
It's closure. It's not the results any of us wanted, of course.
Neighbors in the tight-knit community calling his death horrifying.
We're a close neighborhood, and everyone has felt this very strongly. Yeah. If you notice, there's blue ribbons have been put up through the neighborhood, Find Eli, and so it's been a neighborhood effort.
I haven't slept in a week. I pretty much, my neighbors are the same way. We've just been doing whatever we can.
Nobody deserved to die this way, and we need to make sure we do everything in our power to make sure we can get justice for this little boy.
Elijah's mother and her boyfriend were both arrested last week in New York City in connection with his disappearance. But once again, police telling us no one has been charged at this time for his death.
It would take a month for the autopsy report to be finalized. November 22, 2021. According to the report, it was estimated that Eli had died sometime between September 21st and September 24th, 2021. It was revealed that Eli had died as a result of prolonged torture and neglect. His death was not quick, occurring over the course of as long as a year, before his tiny body gave up after one last beating. The five-year-old died from a combination of malnourishment, bed sores, face and head injuries, and acute fentanyl intoxication, manner of death being homicide. The bed sores were so severe, the medical examiner wrote in their report, there was an indication that Eli had been held in restraints prior to his death. The medical examiner also determined that Eli may have become so malnourished that he wasn't able to move, which also could have contributed to the bed sores. The average five-year-old weighing 40 pounds, whereas Eli weighed only 19 pounds at the time of his death, half of what he should have weighed for a healthy and active child. It was also later revealed that a needle as well as a coat hanger were responsible for some piercing injuries to Eli's face. It is also believed that Danielle hit him with a shower rod at some point. April 18, 2022. Danielle Dufinia was charged with 7 counts in total, including first-degree murder for purposely causing Eli's death, second-degree murder for causing Eli's death with the extreme indifference to the value of human life, child endangerment, and witness tampering. The indictment of first-degree murder lists the timeline from September 27, 2020 to September 24, 2021, possibly to account for the prolonged torture and starvation that she brought upon Eli. Danielle is due to go to trial right now, basically, at the time of this recording, October 7th, 2024. This was delayed for a whole host of reasons, such as Danielle changing attorneys and that Danielle was listed as a potential witness for Harmony's father, Adam Montgomery's trial on weapons charges. Now, she didn't end up testifying at this trial, but it wasn't held until June 2023, and this needed to go ahead first, apparently. Danielle's now former boyfriend, Joseph Stath, is expected to testify against her at trial.
A mother in New Hampshire has pleaded guilty to murdering her son. His body was found buried in a state park in Abington. WBZ's Christina Rex was in the courtroom in Nashua, New Hampshire. And Christina, I know the details of the crime that prosecutors revealed this morning were really hard to hear.
Yeah, Brianna, for 50 minutes, the prosecutor read the harrowing facts that would have been presented at trial had there been one, including disturbing text messages between Danielle Dauphiné and her boyfriend about her then four-year-old son.
I hate him. I hate him.
Prosecutors say Dauphiné openly hated her son. The 38-year-old mother of 6 children pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and tampering with a witness. That means a minimum of 58 and a half years in prison and a maximum of life.
September 29, 2022. Joseph accepted a plea deal and pleaded guilty to manslaughter. Joseph also pleaded guilty to second-degree assault, concealing evidence, and witness tampering. He was sentenced to 22 to 45 years in prison. Joseph's mother, Joanne, attended the sentencing hearing, disrupting the courtroom by yelling to her son not to accept the plea deal, that he did nothing wrong. Joanne crying out loud when the sentence was read. During the sentencing trial, a series of disturbing text messages were found between Danielle and Joseph. The two discussing mistreating Eli as well as not feeding him. At one point, Joseph texted Danielle, telling her she needed to start feeding the boy, and laying off him a bit so he could recover and they could leave the house more often. It's not clear how much of a role Joseph had in the physical violence towards Eli. I did read in some contemporary news articles that he did pick Eli up by his arm and throw him. But at the very least, he was compliant. He knew what was happening to this little boy and he stood by and allowed it to happen. Yes, Eli was not his child, but he could have contacted the authorities at any time to save Eli's life. Joseph addressed the court saying he never intended for any of this to happen to Eli, that all Eli deserved was to be loved. There have been more allegations made against Danielle in other text messages, this time to an acquaintance of hers. And what Danielle would say about Eli in these text messages is extremely troubling. Danielle would compare her son to Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer, that she had no connection to Eli and she wanted him gone. In court, we also learned more about what happened to Eli the day he died. Joseph returned home from work to find Eli in the bathtub. He was naked and bleeding from an injury to his head. There were broken tiles all around him. Joseph claimed he then put a bandage on Eli and took him to bed, that he didn't seek any medical help or take him to the hospital. And the next morning when Joseph checked on him, Eli had passed away. Danielle then allegedly told Joseph to get rid of Eli's body, and the two of them put him in the back of his truck driving to Arlington, Massachusetts. There they buried the five-year-old in a shallow grave at the state park, and then they just drove south, knowing the police were after them for answers, driving until they reached New York where they would be arrested. August 2024. Joseph Stath received parole for falsifying evidence, but he will remain in prison for decades to come, as this simply meant he could now commence his sentences on the manslaughter and assault charges. Joseph is currently being held at Burlington State Prison in New Hampshire. Danielle Dufinia is awaiting trial and is currently incarcerated at the Hillsborough County Jail. In his victim impact statement at Joseph's sentencing trial, Eli's father, Tim Lewis, was video linked from his home in Arizona to address the court, speaking directly to Joseph, quote, "You are less than human. You could have stepped up to stop this at any point if you had been man enough. You could have brought him back to us at any point," unquote. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. May 2024. Eli's father filed a wrongful death lawsuit against New Hampshire DCYF, claiming the organisation was negligent and that they failed to keep his son safe while he lived with his mother. This lawsuit is ongoing. Like with Danielle's trial, there seems to be some back and forth over what should be submissible as evidence. Unfortunately, lawsuits such as these can drag out for years, so watch this space. Joanne was isolated and ridiculed after Eli was found, the community blaming her in part too because it all happened in her house, and because she stood by her son's side declaring his innocence. Living in a small town became impossible for Joanne after this point. However, selling her property was almost impossible too, as residents would stand outside the home yelling abuse. Joanne was able to eventually sell her home, and she has moved out of the area. As you can see, the tight-knit community of Merrimack really banded together in the aftermath of Eli's murder. They really took his death personally. The day after Eli was found, a candlelight vigil was organised at Watson Park and attended to by over 100 heartbroken residents, some wearing hand-embroidered large blue ribbons with Eli's name on them to memorialise the little boy. Light blue ribbons adorned almost every signpost in Merrimack within hours of Eli being found. Signs stating hashtag Eli Strong. School buses painted their windows with justice for Eli. In Arlington, near where Eli was found, there was a large rock dedicated to him where mourners could bring flowers and soft toys to show him that he was loved and cared about. Eli would later be described by those who knew and loved him as an active and happy little boy. He loved trucks and to run around and dance. He loved the colour blue. Everything had to be blue. Unfortunately, I really can't tell you anything more about Eli because no one ever took the time to dote on him and show him the love he truly deserved. I really wish I could tell you more about Eli because he deserved better. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook. Like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, search lives underscore stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.